Welcome to this episode of Saintly Witnesses. On this particular episode, I have a local special guest on who's a minister out here in these H-Town streets, named Crystal Golden. She's going to come on and talk a little bit about womanist theology and like how we can all be better. How can we make the church more inclusive and tear down all these different type of oppressive and different power dynamics at play in our church? How can we break those down so that we can better make the church experience, the worship experience, more inclusive for women and other people of color, women of color too? So thank you for coming on and sharing this crucial information about womanist theology and all that related to it.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So let's get started with the first question. The first question is always like, how'd you get to this point in your life? So the first question is, I know that you went to seminary and got your master's in divinity. So I would imagine while you were in seminary, it wasn't like just a bed of roses I would expect. So what were some of like the obstacles and like victories and triumphs that you experienced while in seminary?
Yeah, that is actually a really good question to start with. So what I tell people all the time about like my religious experience is that I did not grow up in church. And so I found myself as a young adult in college and even post-college, like really trying to figure out what this whole like God and faith thing was about. So before seminary, I had found myself in two non-denominational churches. And I had gone to a Baptist church growing up and had kind of like denounced it. And so I was just in these churches and had finally found the spaces where I was like serving, was like attending 3-4 worship services over the weekend, because you know, you would go to one service and serve for the other two or three. It was really crazy at the time. But then I just like started to really question the world around me. I was an English teacher at the time too. And so, you know, I always felt like my classroom was a portal into the bigger world. And so my kids and I were always talking about gender, sexuality, race, ethnicity, things that were happening around the world. And I recognized that those conversations were not happening at the church I attended. And so I realized that, well, maybe seminary is the thing that I need to do. And so I get there, and one of the first like challenges I had to recognize was that I felt like I did not belong, because I was surrounded by people who knew they wanted to be pastors. They knew they wanted to be leaders in their churches. They had churches that backed them. They were a part of large denominations. So I went to a United Methodist seminary. And so they were all up and through there. And I just didn't really know, other than the fact that I had a bunch of questions, I didn't know what else I was doing there. And so it took a while for me to get past like my own like imposter syndrome and recognize that I too had a space. And I think my victory is also connected to that. It was in seminary where I really learned the importance of like embracing community. So we were, other than the United Methodist community and culture, we were still like pretty diverse in terms of like denomination, in terms of race and age. And so I was able to work in our Office of Student Life. And that was a space where, you know, we got to try different spiritual practices. We got to listen to what students were asking for, like what the needs were, because, you know, it was a different type of graduate school experience. We not only went to class together, we also went to worship together. We also had to complete internships within congregations that may or may not be familiar with us. We had to ask really big questions about social justice and what that meant in terms of like our faith life. And so I love doing this alongside my classmates, and it was like my space where I finally felt like, oh, this feels right for me.
Okay, that's interesting that you mentioned that. And thank you for sharing about, I wrote down imposter syndrome and you not feeling like you belonged in this space. And like you mentioned that you didn't grow up in the church. And similarly, like I didn't grow up in the church, and I grew up in like a very irreligious, non-religious household. But through grace and like people, family members in my life, I got into Christian spaces. But it wasn't until like I got into like college and made it my own. But even in these college experience and going to different churches, and even later in life too, it's like, dang, like you encounter so many different dynamics of like class and race, and it's like, do you really belong in this space? And you kind of feel inferior. But that's a whole different topic. But I appreciate that you talked on imposter syndrome though. So my next question is, so you kind of talked about how you join this space and how you had like a love and passion for gender and sexuality and social justice, and you didn't see those things spoken about like in the church. But sometimes those things are talked about in the church, but from a very like rigid black and white standpoint, and in the and people use the Bible to like justify these topics too. So how did you come to the point in your faith journey when you had to like deconstruct Christianity and the Bible so that you could like open up to the fullness of God and how you wanted to relate to God?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So our first year, first and second year, we took Old Testament fall and spring, and then we took New Testament the next fall and spring. And it was those Bible courses that really, A, it showed me how open-minded I was to reinterpreting the text, and also the experience of having like a or knowing a particular Bible story, but really learning like the history of it, the how it's been revised, the history of like the history in the space. So what's happening in the background, whose voices are prioritized, whose voices are missing. I think those skills were like very helpful as I started to deconstruct and reconstruct. Even like the story about Moses in the Red Sea and looking at the anthropological research of like the area where the Red Sea was supposed to be and realizing like, hey, this doesn't actually match the magnetism of this story that we've all heard talked about in this one way. And so then what then does that mean for how I interpret that story? Became like extra important because we always talk about, or the big question that always comes up is the Bible real? Is the Bible true? Is it without error, right? And so leaning into those questions and recognizing that the Bible is simply just a collection of stories. A collection of stories written by all these different people who had all these different agendas from all these different places. And so learning how to like dive into that is the English teacher like kind of comes out in me too, right? Because we take our texts in literature and we read them and we help our kids like dive deeper into them as well. We ask these questions about, well, what was the author's purpose? What is the main idea here? Do you agree with it? Do you disagree with it? Like you can take those same skills and apply it to the Bible. And in that process, that's how I start to like see and relate to God in a much bigger and a more creative way than I had ever in my life.
Okay, that's a good points to expand on, and thank you for sharing a little bit about your life. So like I said in the beginning, like your whole work as a minister revolves around the theological framework of women's theology, and so I'm familiar with it, being like a methodology rooted in like the black woman experience and advocating for and breaking barriers among class, religion, gender, and all these different type of like social categories. And I'm familiar also with like the great James Cone and his book of Black Power and Black Theology and Black Liberation, or Black Theology and Liberation, which are two great books on like Afrocentric Christianity in the like from the late 60s. So what is like your introduction to a womanist theology and thought? And are there any like key theologians, books, and pivotal writings that we should know about that touch on this topic?
So my introduction to womanist theology actually came when Beyoncé dropped the Lemonade album, and writer, scholar, theologian Candace Benbow put together a Lemonade syllabus. And so I was just looking at the syllabus in general because I was like, oh, she created a like a academic tool to go with this this work of art. And in it, there was a section, I actually have it pinned to my little bulletin board here, on religion and womanist theology. And so I think I was just really curious, and I started to look at the names of the different authors that were presented. So Kelly Brown Douglas, Monica Coleman, Katie Cannon, I think Emily, oh, she's not here. But as I started to look even into like the descriptions of the books and the authors' biographies, I noticed something that just felt really different from other like Black Christian female writers. Like there was something about recognizing the experience of Black women like holistically and authentically that was different from like Priscilla Shire comes up in my mind as like someone who I don't want to say she or she has she doesn't talk about her Blackness in the same way she talks about how in her relations to God, like her like racial identity is not is left out of the picture. Whereas these womanist theologians and writers like made it their mission and their goal to center on their experience as Black women, their experience as Black women, not only in church, but also in academia and in like real life too, because all those things like were interconnected for them. And so that was like my introduction to womanist theology. And then I had the opportunity when I was in seminary to take a worship course on feminist and womanist theology. So then I was able to incorporate womanist thought into how we thought about worship. And so how do the elements of womanist theology show up in our spiritual spaces? Like how do we make room for it in our preaching, in our singing, in our dancing, and how we relate to one another as we relate to God?
Okay, that's a good point. And I remember you shared. I was just looking at that the other day. The Lemonade syllabus you had sent me some time ago last year, and I was just looking through it. It's really extensive and long. It has like a lot of different categories and like music, books, poets, a lot of different people that you could definitely research their work and understand more about theology and just how they view about the world with this paradigm. So that's a good little resource, the Lemonade syllabus. So my next question is, how do the values in the Bible and its interpretation impact women, specifically Black women in the church? And I say, and I think about like me as a Catholic, and you're not a Catholic, but we are all in this Christian faith together. And I can think as in the Catholic Church, the role of women is obviously like non-existent. But I think about the woman. I mean, she's like on the pathway to sainthood now, serving the God Thea Bowman, and like basically she had to like kind of carve her own way. It was like being a master liturgist and like a master orator and a singer, and she was a PhD nun, and like she had to kind of forge her own way post-60s, 70s, 80s, 60s, 70s, 80s in this like male-dominated white church as a black woman, even while she wrestled and with cancer. So how do you think the Bible and its interpretation impact black women in the church?
Yeah. So this is a very interesting question. And I struggled with it because I think before we even get to values, we have to talk about whose interpretation we're using to then take away these values, right? So when I think about biblical values before I was exposed to womanist theology, or like even the concept of theologizing in general, like I think about how purity and submission and being meek and mild and selflessness, like those values would serve the patriarchy basically. And so now that I'm on the other side of that, when I think about how I interpret the Bible and how I read and interact with the text, and then how I preach it, it comes from this hermeneutic of the Imago Dei. And if I see all people around me in the image of God, then what does this text tell me about people and about my experience with God? And so now, personally, like some of my values that I like see and look for are like justice and freedom and liberation and creativity and choice. And so those values, they speak more to me because of my perspective of how I, or not my perspective, my interpretation of the Bible. And I think those are the same values that then liberate me and also other Black women.
I get what she's saying with that one. So how can Black women and even Black men play a major role in redefining Christianity from its like male-centered theology? And like you just pointed out, when you talk about submission and modesty and chastity and all these different things, it's almost like on those particular topics, it sometimes it's a double standard on when we in the church. And even like I can think about so many black women who are entertainers and stuff like that, and they'll have like a nice dress on, and they'll say something like, "Black women shouldn't wear their dress. You shouldn't wear their dress. It's too shapely." But black women got we black women built different, as they say, and so that's just their body figure, and that's how they dress. And like you imposing, like religion to condemn black women's like biology almost to the point. And I think that's very heinous to do, to use religion as a way to attack black women as like sinful. And it just feeds into a lot of like misogyny. So how do you think we men and women can play a role in like redefining Christianity?
Yeah. Ooh. So there are a lot of different ways I wanted to answer this question. So bear with me.
Okay.
I think that
You gotta keep it real too.
I'm gonna try. What first comes to mind is that male-dominated theology, it often like comes from this space of wanting to know it all, like wanting to know all the answers, being not having any questions, wanting to be sure, wanting to assume that one is righteous and all powerful. And it's almost as if in worshiping, in attempting to worship God, we worship men or man in general. And I think to get away from that, we have to acknowledge that God is still a mystery in many ways. Like I think it's the it's not it might be the Church of Christ. or maybe disciples. I forget which denomination it is, but one of their phrases or mottos is that God is still speaking. And I think that perspective allows for us to be comfortable with our unanswered questions about God and the mystery of God, and knowing that God is, right? So allowing ourselves to like pull back from having all the answers or trying to like dominate God in a way, if that makes sense. And I think another way to answer this question too is to reread the text from the opposite side. We often, or let me not say we often, I think male-dominated theological perspectives often posit the reader as like the winner or the one that is victorious. But what happens when we're not the Israelites and instead we are the Canaanites? Or like what happens when we recognize that genocide is in the Bible? Sexual assault is in the Bible. There are stories upon stories about people being labeled as outcasts. There are religious people that are money hungry. Like the same things we see today are also still present in the Bible, right? So then what happens when we reread the Bible from that perspective? Or even what perspectives are we missing? Because there's a lot of men dominating in the Bible, but what about the women? What happens when Hagar meets the divine in the wilderness? Where does her story go after that? We don't really know, right? But there's something there. And I think just recognizing like all of those elements helps us to move away from like this sorry, my dog is sitting right next to me. This like self-assuredness about God that doesn't actually make sense because, you know, we only get so much about God in the Bible, and yet there's still so much more to know and to learn.
Okay. And that's definitely a good point and definitely good ammunition to be the catalyst for change within the church for men and women. But I'm wondering, I also want to see what you think about this too, when we think about like man's role, because I think it's a we bear a strong or a large responsibility to ensure that like this space is welcome and inclusive for women. And when we talk about root causes of like social issues, one of them obviously like the patriarchy and like the patriarchal element of Christianity. And you know, how can you say it? Basically, the church is like a place of violence and abuse for a lot of women who have to just fall in line with who think they have to fall in line out of fear of like ostracizing, like being labeled blackmailed or you know gossip in the church. They feel like they have to submit to the pastor or the church higher clergy in their advances and their abuse and any type of like assault. And so I think a big point, a big portion of like how men take responsibility is that like we need to practice some self-reflection, some introspection on our own like power so that we can stop dehumanizing women as like the biblical or sometimes the biblical way sees them as like helpless and like your view, you're to blame for the situation. You're less spiritual as a man. And so like these prominent beliefs of like less spiritual, you're like a helpmate, you're just a helpmate. Like these things contribute to like this extra violent atmosphere for women in the church. So yeah, what you think about that? Do you think, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. So I got like six different bullet points on this question. But yeah, everything you just said, I think gendering God also plays a huge role in this too. So when you see obey his commands, follow his word, and then even thinking about the story of Adam and Eve. And I was maybe in my late 20s, or maybe not late 20s, in my mid 20s, when I finally heard the stories of, or perspectives of Eve being redeemed from not being like the woman that filled the world, or, all the other ways in which Eve is downcasted or disrespected even. And so honoring her story as a woman, honoring the stories of women in the Bible, recognizing the influence of women in the Bible, but also in our churches, because half of our churches would not run and function without the work of the women, right?
The church schools, the Sunday schools, the service outside of food, all that.
Yeah, we wouldn't have a church if there weren't, if it, there actually is a book called If It Wasn't for the Women. I forget who the author was, but I have it somewhere. I think it's Carrie Day. But anywho, like recognizing the role of women, and then like how we gender God as male. I think when I started to not gender God, things also changed for me. Like God is God. So when we don't give God a gender, then that takes away from trying to mold God into like this masculine. I'm sorry, she's about to get really upset. but from like this masculine lens. And I personally see like the feminine aspects of God that we often ignore, like especially in the Psalms and the other wisdom texts where God can be compared to a woman. Like recognizing that too will also be helpful to people's perspectives and pulling away from like this male-dominated culture.
How can the Black church be a place that seriously understands like all these elements of power, exclusion, oppression, and create inclusion when it comes to this treatment of Black women? And like we kind of talked about like how the Black church is like a bastion for violence and abuse for many Black women, emotional control, I mean emotional manipulation, a lot of different elements. Yeah, so how can we create this church better?
By understanding our history, and not just like the history that goes back to like the civil rights movement and church involvement, but really at the transatlantic slave trade. What did our ancestors take from their cultures and bring here? And what happened when they were forced to adopt Christianity? What does it mean for slavery to have been justified in the Bible? Then what did we do to protect ourselves? How did we show up in both those environments and then in our own? What happened when we were able to build our own churches? How did respectability politics play a huge role in that? And then recognizing that those same like tools didn't, I mean, protected us at to some extent then, but do they still now? No, absolutely not. And recognizing that when we police one another, what happens in our churches? People either have to get in line and fit in, or they stop going to church altogether. And so we lose like that diversity of our communities. We lose the voices, we lose the people that can really, that probably have the insight to like keep our spiritual communities going. I like to think also about like the Old Testament and the New Testament, and like how we even end up with Jesus in the first place. A lot of the Old Testament is the people asking for a king, asking for somebody to like take control because they just could not get it together, and someone to like hold this power here on earth. And then we get Jesus, who completely flips the idea of power on its head and then begins to like build a community of people that empower one another. So what happens when the church pastor allows the church members to really have a say in the programming, to ask questions about what's presented in their preaching and in the Bible study? And then specifically with Black women, what happens when we, I mentioned it earlier, like that radical subjectivity, what happens when we allow Black women to be the experts in their lives and in their stories, and to show up authentically in whatever it is they choose to wear to Sunday worship, whenever to have like real conversations about their experiences in church and in life, and how as Black women, how we face racism and sexism and all the other things, more than Black men.
Yeah, no more the days of like the blankets over your hands, the shawls. The women practice their bodily autonomy and self-determination. That's how it goes. Well, I definitely appreciated you sharing all this information. Definitely a good primer on like women's theology and giving us some of the information that we need to all go back and research more on so that we can better like make the church more inclusive to the needs and desires of Black women here in America and everywhere really where a Black woman is. But definitely thank you. And I know the work that you do with all the people you interact with in ministry will definitely grow abundantly and be fruitful. And we pray that you continue to, impact lives and empower everybody.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. And you guys pray for Crystal and the work that she does, whether it be here in H-Town or everywhere, anywhere she goes, to who she speaks with. And you guys can tune in to the next one.